This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
And a good Monday, good Thursday morning to you as we continue with Wake Up Call. Almost got lost the calendar there for a quick second. It is a throwback Thursday. We are celebrating the final episode of Cheers in 1993. It's also round one of the PGA Championship. And this is a second major of the year for golf after the Masters in April. And it is the second time that the PGA Championship has been played in May. It is underway right now. Cameron Tringali is leading with Ben Pollard very, very early in round number one. This is the Ocean Course at Kiawah Island. It held the PGA Championship in 2012, which was won by Rory McIlroy. But if you know a little bit of your golf history, it was also the scene for the War on the Shore, which was the 1991 Ryder Cup, which was won by the United States. In one of the more, I don't know, controversial final rounds, final moments of that Ryder Cup, which was at the time we were going through sort of the Gulf War, at the time, you know, trying to free Kuwait, and there was this patriotic theme that was sweeping through the Ryder Cup. Like, the American team had a camouflage outfit and all that. And, yeah, it was a little over the top. But Bernhard Langer had a putt to win the Ryder Cup for Europe, and that would have earned a tie. If he had made the putt, it would have earned a tie, and Europe would have kept the cup. And if he missed, the United States would win. And it was a makeable putt, but it wasn't an easy putt. And Langer stood over it. The whole world is watching. The Ryder Cup by that time had really started to crescendo. It really started to build up a lot of us versus them, you know, pride and all of the patriotic themes that you were seeing all week at Kiawah Island. And as Bernhard Langer was, you know, hit the ball and the ball was rolling, you kind of could tell it wasn't going in. And when it missed, the place went ballistic. Everybody was screaming and hollering. And it's such a different feel for a golf tournament, because you may be rooting for Tiger. The Phil may be the sentimental favorite. You may be rooting for an unknown amateur, but you don't cheer and scream and go wild when somebody misses a putt. And the Ryder Cup is the only place that could happen. Kiawah Island, where the PGA Championship is, was that scene back in 1991. So a little throwback Thursday as well. We got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up, and then Ryan Ballingy will join us. We'll talk PGA Championship as we continue. It's Hour 2. It's Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, it's the good, the bad, and the dumb on a throwback Thursday as we continue along here on Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. Let's get the good of the day. We're celebrating the 93 television lineup with Cheers' finale on this date. That's a pretty good good, but what's the rest of the good?
The rest of the good. Well, I was going to talk about the, you know, friends having a reunion, but, you know, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about reunions. So instead, I'm going to talk about a bakery in Milwaukee.
Yeah, sure.
Home of the Goodland, right?
And that Good Earth, I think, right?
Good Earth, isn't that Algonquin? According to Alice Cooper.
That's right, according to Alice Cooper. That's right. How
I learned it. Anyways, a bakery was robbed. Not so good.
Ooh.
But they took the surveillance video and screen grabbed the burglar and put it on cookies.
Good job.
And then distributed the cookies and were able to nab the perp.
That's wonderful. By the way, why are surveillance videos in 2021 still grainy?
That's a great question.
Like, why are we still using ancient technology?
I mean, can't you put the iPhone camera in your Ring?
Yeah.
Doorbell thing? Because it's still, I mean, even that one, I mean, even those that are new, it still comes out grainy looking. And
we never upgrade why are we not upgrading constantly?
Yeah, why don't we have high def security cameras?
Like that should have been lasered in. There he is. We have everything. We have the little pimple on his chin. Yep. We have a little mole on the back of his ear. Like, we know exactly who he is despite wearing a mask. We can figure this out, no problem. But it's always like some weird grainy video that you're still like, I don't know if I can. Is that even a person? It doesn't even look like a person. Yeah. Why? So I'm hoping that this was a pretty good picture that they put on the cookie.
Not really. No. I mean, it looks like. I mean, it's black and white, so you got that going for you. I guess it's somewhat of a good follow, but I don't think it's not what you would expect. Like, it's not, you know, like a crisp ID photo.
Yeah. And that's a great idea, by the way.
Yeah, it was a fantastic idea.
Yeah.
You know, they got him. I can't call him a cookie monster because he wasn't there to steal the cookies.
Can you imagine if it was like super sharp, like really good video, like excellent, dots per inch or whatever they call it, whatever the resolution thing is.
Well, you know, this the other thing I was thinking about, this brings a new spin onto like passing out flyers. Like, have you seen this man? You know, people just take crumble it up, throw it away. Yeah, you hand someone a cookie. Like, have you seen this man?
Ooh, you say to the public, somebody robbed us. We don't know who it is. We have their picture on security camera. It's on a cookie. Come into the store, get a free cookie. Oh, it's all we're asking. And most people will buy something while they're there too.
Yeah.
Not many people won't walk in, just grab your free cookie and leave. But you know what? What else you got? You know, while I'm here, I'll pick up a thing of whatever, chocolate covered strawberries or whatever the heck else you do, and I'll leave. That's a brilliant idea, fantastic idea. More people should do something like that.
I thought it was awesome.
Good job, Milwaukee. All right, what's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day. You know, in sports, there's nepotism. Sometimes, right?
Yes, there is.
You know, you have a coach who will play his son, and you just don't know how it's going to go. I mean,
in broadcasting too, I should add.
Broadcasting too. You know, Doc Rivers' son, Austin Rivers. I mean, he's made a name for himself, but probably was able to get a few more perks in life because of the name. You know, we saw during the NCAA tournament, Jim Boeheim's son, Buddy.
That's right. You know, Buddy Boeheim, fantastic.
But he proved to be a great player. There's a Chinese businessman who bought a soccer team, a second-tier team in China.
In China or somewhere else?
In China. Okay. This is all happening in China. He bought a soccer team in China and forced the manager to play his son. And all I'm going to say is that his son is a specimen.
Oh, my God. Don't tell me he's, like, out of shape and...
Well, he's 35 years old.
Oh, no.
And he weighs roughly about 277 pounds.
Oh, my gosh. Isn't that the worst?
Yeah. I mean, fortunately, it's a second-tier league. You know, it's not really...
All right, this manager isn't anywhere. Really like that. He's just like, what are you going to do?
Yeah, is this manager... I don't know if this manager is looking at it like going, you know what, this is my stepping stone to, you know, my career or whatever.
He's probably like, look, I could be working in the coal mines. I could be working in some electrical factory. I'm coaching a soccer team. The owner wants to put in his fat old kid. I'm more than happy to let that happen.
Pretty much, yeah.
Right? So, as long as I'm doing this for a living, I'm happy.
Yeah, I mean, it's just funny.
It is hilarious, though.
You know, I mean, I am in no means, you know, in shape like I used to be when I was younger, but I feel like, you know, I could hold my own. And I look at this guy and I'm like, you know what? If he can play, I can play.
See, that's the problem in a place like that. Like in America, that couldn't happen because there is a commissioner and all of the owners agree to a level of competitive balance, right? Like if you buy an NBA team, you can't have your son play for the NBA team because the other 29 owners would say, no, that's not what we're doing. All of us in as a unit, you may buy the franchise, but you're more responsible to the whole league. So this league is not going to be filled with cousins and sons and a buddy I owe a favor to and all of that. Because the competitiveness has to be at the highest level. We all agree to that. I'm sure over there it's like, buy a team. Do whatever you want with it. Fill it with school children. Fill it with old people. Fill it with relatives.
Yep.
We don't care. There's nothing. There's nobody telling you can't.
No,
so
fulfill your family's dream.
Exactly.
That's all it is.
Exactly.
It happens here. It comes under enormous scrutiny.
Oh, can you imagine if like Mark Cuban put in his brother-in-law?
Yeah.
To play? Like every other owner would go, no. Your brother-in-law can't play in the NBA because you own the team.
Sorry about that, Mark.
That's not happening. No. This is like if you buy a McDonald's, you can't just start serving, you know, barbecue and pizza.
Because you feel like it.
Just because you feel like it. Like, well, I own the restaurant. No, you are part of the franchise. You have to abide by the laws of the franchise. They probably don't even have that over there. Probably just, you know, fill it with whoever you want. But like I said, who's going to complain? Right? Is the coach going to quit? Is he going to walk out?
No, he's not going to quit either.
That is funny, though. 35-year-old fat kid.
Oh, dude. Going out there and playing soccer. He's a specimen.
I'll bet.
You know, it's kind of fun watching him. I guess I'm going to rewatch the video, but there's one moment where he turns over the ball. Right, and if you're a highly tuned athlete, and you turn over the ball. What's your mentality? You got to go chase it down, right?
Got to go chase it down.
Not him.
No, would he?
I'll get the next one.
Nope, I'm just gonna stand right here.
I'm gonna stand right here. You get the ball back to me, please. I'm open.
That's fantastic. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
Well, kind of two. One, we're gonna have to one we might have to revisit because there's breaking news on the ESPN right now. That Tim Tebow signs a contract with the Jaguars.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, that just came across the wire, so we'll probably have to revisit that one. But the real dumb of the day is, and I can't see this going over well at all, but airlines could start weighing passengers before flights.
No, I don't like this idea.
Now, I get, you know, the whole premise behind it is, you know, there's a certain weight and balance that these airlines have to.
Oh, stop it!
You know, and it's for safety reasons.
No, it isn't.
And it's because a study was done, and 30% of Americans are obese. America is getting fatter, so now we need to start weighing people. Listen, you
enough with this nonsense.
The only thing I can think about, you know, I might step on a scale and just go, okay, whatever. You're not getting a woman to do it.
No, first of all, that's enough of this. That is not the reason. That is insane. That's stupid. That is dumb. It was, you know what? I got the two-seat thing. That's embarrassing.
Yep.
But there are some people that are like, you're not fitting in the seat. I don't know how to tell you this. You're just not. That's the way it is. Right? But this weighing and micro-calculating, stop it. Stop it. We've been flying planes forever.
I don't know if I feel comfortable if you guys are doing your final calculations as we're boarding the plane.
Well, what are you going to do with people who bought a ticket and you get to a point where like, you know what? We're like 50 pounds over our normal limit. Like, we're going to have to send you home and put you on another flight. Really? Is that what we're doing? No, we're not doing this. That's stupid. The first airline that does this, you know how this works, right? The first airline that does it, and then it opens the door for every other airline to do it. It's just like the baggage fee. I remember the first time I heard an airline toying with the baggage fee, right? My normal economics in high school brain went, well, that's not going to be good because people will just go to the other airlines that don't charge a baggage fee. Was I not 100% wrong on that one? It was like all the other airlines went, oh, thank God. Oh, we've been wanting to do this for years. Finally, Delta's doing it. Now we could do it. And now everybody does it. I don't know. Southwest still not doing it?
Yeah, Southwest is still the only one.
They're still holding on.
Two bags free.
Right? Exactly.
Here's the other thing too, right?
They're just trying to get you to pay more. That's the whole thing. That's what's going to be resolved. It's not going to be taking people off flights. They're going to say, "Oh, you're over the weight limit. You need a weight surcharge so we can make more money." That's all it is. That plane can fly.
This has happened to you, right? And here's the argument against it. You've had a bag that's over 50 pounds, right?
Right.
What have you had to do? Got to pay extra.
Pay extra.
That's it. So you're telling me that are you going to charge one person? Like, okay, guys, we're about 10 pounds overweight. That works out to about 50 cents each.
Yeah. And you know what else this is going to do? I'm telling you right now, you know what else this will do? You're right about women. They're not getting on that scale.
No.
You're 100% right. They're never going on that scale. But you know what else is? You know what else it does? And I don't know what percentage of the population this is. Maybe it's small. Maybe it's really tiny. But the people that are nervous to fly in the first place, they're going to be even more nervous. When you start setting up this idea that this is so precise that if we're not 100% on top of this, that plane is going down. You're just going to scare people. Like if you get like grandma who's never flown and she wants to see her grandkids across the country. Like she's never been on a plane before. And she gets on there and they're like, you got to step on the scale, man. She goes, why? He goes, well, you got to make sure that the plane has got enough, that not enough weight is in the plane.
Yep,
why? Because if it's too full, you know what? You're just going to make me say it, aren't you, Grandma? It will crash. Then she's going to freak out. Like, you don't need to be doing that.
Nah, if you do that to me, I'm going to go, okay, yeah, Where's the bus?
Yeah, exactly.
I'll take the bus. You're going to have to weigh me, bus, because we're crossing over a bridge.
Yeah, I'll take Amtrak in the 17 days it takes to get from Denver to Santa Fe. I'll be on the Amtrak for 14 weeks.
And all the stops.
Right, and all the stops. Right? But that's dumb. That is but again, it's not, they're not doing it for safety. They're doing it so they can implement another fee. They can say, "Hey, fatty, get on the scale. Oh, look at that.
You're
40 pounds overweight than the normal average for that seat. You don't mind paying another $72 fat fee?"
Yep.
That's what it is.
But we're going to disguise it under more fuel costs.
Exactly. So that's what it's going to be. It's going to be, you're overweight, and if you want to get on that plane, $72 right now.
Or
what?
Is it going to be a situation where you have to balance out the plane? Are they going to go down the aisle and go, excuse me, sir, can you move to the right side of the plane? I know you want to sit with your family,
yeah,
but I need you to sit over here because there's another guy who's about the same size as you on that side. We need to balance this plane out.
It's amazing. It's unbelievable. And this, you know,
makes,
what it is? 99.999% of Americans don't realize how flying actually works. So they'll just buy into everything you sell them.
Yep.
Right? They'll be like, "Oh, really? You do? You need to balance out this plane, huh? Really? Okay, well, absolutely. I mean, you guys are the experts. You guys know what you're doing. You guys certainly don't want us to die in mid-flight. So,
I remember,
yeah, we'll do whatever you say.
I remember this was a couple of years ago. I still don't know how they do it, but they flew Shamu from one side of the country to another.
Okay? Yes, exactly.
And you want to talk about balancing plane. How steady was that plane with sloshing water?
Exactly. How about you do this? Instead of charging me a fat fee, why don't you double the salaries of all your engineers to build planes that don't need to worry about a fat fee?
Yeah.
How about that?
You know, I don't need it to be autopilot all the way and computerized. You know, I could trust the pilot to hold on to the joystick a little bit longer if it, doesn't pose the fat fee.
All right, that's the good, the bad, the dumb on a throwback Thursday. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
A throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, we are celebrating the TV shows of 1993 because on this date, Cheers ended its 11-year run on network television on NBC with its final episode. As we continue along with Wake Up Call, keeping your car clean is simple, inexpensive maintenance that helps keep your car looking like new. O'Reilly Auto Parts has car wash and wax for painted surfaces, as well as interior car products like leather, vinyl, carpet, and upholstery cleaners. Visit O'Reilly Clean Car Month, and their professional parts people will make sure you get the best detailing products for your vehicle. Shop your local store or online at O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. That was Home Improvement, right? That was the Tim Allen show. As we celebrate the television shows of 1993. All right, so Tim Tebow, as we mentioned earlier, is officially signed a one-year deal to play for Jacksonville. So what happens next? Is he on the team? He hasn't made the team yet, has he? He's just working out with the team.
What does it mean?
It feels like
he signed he signed a contract today.
He signed a contract, right? But that doesn't mean he's on the team.
No,
yet,
he's not
right?
on the team, but I mean,
like,
it could
like
mean
this is not how it works.
At the least, he's on the practice squad.
I've covered the NFL for a long time. He's just on the team if he makes the 53-man roster.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So,
I guess
he's still trying out, right? Because
he's still working out. I don't know.
I got a buddy. I got a friend named Buddy on Facebook who I used to know in Colorado, but now he does radio in Ocala. And he's posting on social media that, where can I get a jersey? This is awesome news. And I'm like, what do you mean it's awesome news? It's not awesome news yet. It's awesome news if he makes the roster. But he has not made the team. He's not going to be on the opening. We don't know right now if he is on the team. Like, in terms of, like, opening day, September 12th, Jacksonville against Houston or wherever they're playing.
Can we say at the very least he's practice squad?
I don't know if he'll take that.
No, I know that. But, I mean, contractually, is he obligated to?
I think he signed a contract that says this is your contract if you make the team. Right? If you make the team, this is the contract you'll play for. But you haven't made the team yet. You'll go through workouts, and then we'll make cuts like we do it for everybody. But this is the team. This is the thing. Tebow's I have yet to find a guy as polarizing when it comes to stories as Tebow.
Seriously,
he's serious. It's amazing, isn't it?
Okay,
really.
I said this once before. If he makes the team, will this serve as his third miracle? Will that complete it? Because then, right. Then you can have St. Timothy.
That's very true.
He has two miracles in his book, in his pocket right now. He just needs the third one to get full sainthood.
Yeah, that's true. Good point.
And making this team could be that miracle.
You know, I think that Urban Meyer is a really, really sticky situation for him to be in. It really is. Because if he keeps Tebow on this roster, it has to be abundantly clear to everybody that is working for him that this kid is a kid. He's 30 something years old. That this guy can play tight end. That this guy is one of the best tight ends that they have available that they can use. If it is lukewarm at best, he's going to lose the team and the guys on his coaching staff by this one decision. If Tebow doesn't play the position well in practice, everybody on that team is going to know it. They are professional athletes.
And does Tebow think he can do this too?
He probably does.
Because, but, I mean, he does. I mean, it's a weird legacy that he's leading.
Yeah.
I mean, he was arguably one of the greatest college quarterbacks the sport has ever seen, right?
Absolutely.
And then,
without question.
And then, you know, he couldn't really make it as an NFL quarterback, although he does have one great play that we won't mention.
He has one great play for a stupid defensive decision by the great Dick LeBeau, Hall of Famer Dick LeBeau. Still.
I wasn't going to mention it, Tony.
Right.
And then he played baseball. We thought it was a joke, but he came close to making it. In fact, he was a broken wrist away.
He made it to Triple A.
Yeah, but he was a broken wrist away from being called up. Yeah. Because I have no doubt in my mind he would have been called up, what was that, 2019? 2018?
I want to say 2019, right?
Yeah, he would have been called up had he not broken his wrist, because he had made the All-Star team, All-Star
in
game.
In Binghamton, yeah.
In Binghamton, and, you know, the Mets were terrible, so why wouldn't the Mets just say, come on up, dude. It's just, you know, we need fans in the stands anyways.
I was saying this when you were out for a couple of days. I was telling Sean, the Denver game, that game against the Steelers, because in overtime, when you don't get eight, you know, I think it's the only one still. You don't get 80-yard walk-off touchdowns to advance in the playoffs.
No, not on one play.
So what was happening, and I said it was so bizarre, was when Tebow completed the pass to Demaryius Thomas, you could see that there was no safety help, and you could see a clearance. And it started to dawn on the crowd that this was going to be a touchdown, that there was no buddy that could catch him, that this was going to be a touchdown. And the noise just increased until he crossed the goal line. And then there was this explosion I had never heard before. Like, I've never heard the stadium go that loud before. And so it was because, again, you just don't see that in the postseason. You see teams pick up 10 yards, pick up 8 yards, pick up 5 yards, pick up 3 yards, moving down the field, and then scoring a touchdown. You don't see, like, the first play of overtime, a completion that goes 80 yards for a touchdown, and then it's it, game over, we're done. And then the game is, you know, that's over. And that's why it's still one of the most electric moments in Denver Bronco history, even though they've won, you know, 3 Super Bowl championships. It's because you just don't see that. But you're right. There's a legacy here of just trying to stay relevant that I think hurts him.
Yeah, I mean,
baseball thing was fine, but he couldn't hit AAA level. He was batting less than 200.
Right.
And then he just thinks at 30-something years old he can just play tight end when people have trained their whole lives to play tight end at the highest level in the world.
Or are we holding him to a higher standard of saying, okay, you know, maybe he's not starting, maybe he's third string tight, but you know, no one keeps third string tight ends.
Yeah. No,
I mean, is he going to be a good blocking tight end?
That's the other thing. Is he going to do all the other little things that are necessary?
Or is he just there? I mean, you know, would it be better to call him like a tight end / slot receiver? Because I think that's how they're going to use him.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. All right. Ryan Ballinger will join us. The PGA Championship underway. We'll get his thoughts on the second major of the year next on Wake Up Call.
Now Well, this is a story all about how my life got flipped, turned upside down. And I'd like to take a minute, just sit right there. I'll tell you how I became the prince of a town called Bel-Air.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, it's a Throwback Thursday. It is 1993. We go back to television shows of 93 because on this date, Cheers ended its 11-year run on NBC, one of the highest-rated season finales of all time, second behind MASH. PGA Championship underway. A Kiawah Island Golf Resort. Ryan Ballinger joins us to talk about that, as well as what you can expect of these next four rounds as we take a look at the PGA Championship. How are you, Ryan?
Good, Tony. How are you?
Good. All right. What is the weather like? What's the weather going to be like? What's the prediction as we look at this ocean golf course?
It's pretty pleasant. It's supposed to be 75 to 80 degrees throughout the next 4 days of competition. The wind should come out of the eastern direction for the first 3 days as predicted, which means the final six holes of the golf course, which are already difficult as it is, should play even harder. And then on Wednesday, we'll get a Sunday, we'll get a reversal of wind out of the west. And that should make the golf course play completely differently for Sunday. So there will be a little bit of drama attached to the final round, regardless of where we are in the tournament Saturday night.
All right, this is one of the longest majors, if not the longest majors, at over 7,800 yards. Are we at that point where there's a portion of the field that will not be competitive because of that?
That's a great question. Yeah, I mean, it's 78-76. It's the longest scorecard, at least in the history of majors. I don't think they're ever going to get to that number. They don't really have any intention of doing that. They just want some kind of accessibility in terms of what they can do with a setup. But you're still going to probably play at some point 7,800 yards this week, and that's pretty crazy. And, yes, that is going to basically price out a whole bunch of players in terms of average second shot distance. I mean, not just the 20-club professionals who really have no chance of making the cut, but also a lot of high-quality professional golfers that got in this field. This is the deepest major championship field of the year. The top 100 in the world get in this field. Someone like Zach Johnson is going to be hitting three woods into a lot of these par fours, especially down the stretch if they're playing into the wind. For the longer-hitting, younger guys, they're hitting five irons and four irons into some holes. So this is going to be a very difficult test for everybody. It's going to be different than what they're used to.
Is this a kind, because of the near the ocean, kind of differentiate between a Lynx golf course that we see in the British Open and a United States golf tournament that's played near the ocean? Are they similar? Is it a similar style? How do they differentiate between what we see here and what we see over there?
Yeah, there's an influence here for certain. I mean, the Pete Dye and his wife Alice Dye, who designed this course 30 years ago, they thought about the ocean course with what you see overseas in mind. Now, they don't have exactly the same soil. They don't have exactly the same grass. We've got paspalum here, which is kind of a tropical grass. They usually have fescue overseas, which is a little bit firmer, a little more finer grass. So that's a little bit of a difference. But the routing is very similar to what you see in a lot of those oceanside courses or seaside courses overseas, where you have a kind of an out-and-back approach. So there is a figure-eight look to this golf course. If you look at it from overhead. 10 holes are on the ocean. That's the most in North America, but it goes out, kind of forms that eight, comes back and forms the eight to finish the golf round. So you play 10 holes into the prevailing wind, and then you play eight holes against it or with it, depending on how it's blowing that day. So what they tried to do was to create a course that, while very difficult, also gave you opportunities to score. It wasn't like you were playing into the wind all day and asking a really difficult question over and over again. They wanted to give you an opportunity to try to score, and that's what the PGA of America is going to try to do with the holes that are playing downwind, depending on the wind each day.
Ryan Ballinger joining us of GolfNewsNet.com on our Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at Progressive.com today. Well, this is the one question I sort of ask all the time about the PGA Championship, where when you get the Masters, it's the iconic golf course. When you get the British Open, it's the location and the elements and the weather. The U.S. Open, trying to keep it close to par. Is there a defining characteristic that the PGA tries to do, that tries to sort of say, this is how we kind of have our, this is how we want to have our tournament identified?
I think they've tried for so long to try to find an identifier as easy as the other three majors have it, and they just don't have one. It's kind of hard for them to differentiate themselves. I think that was why they made this move to May, in hoping that by being the second major, there would be some more prestige attached to it, because it wasn't the last one. If you're going to win the Grand Slam, you got to win the PGA. Well, that's second. Great. That's kind of what they're hoping the defining characteristic is right now. But from a setup perspective, it is probably the most fair of the four majors. It's the one that's most like a PGA Tour event. And I think the PGA of America is very cognizant of that. But I think their defining characteristic truly is they have the deepest field, at least of the top 100 players, compared to any other major. I mean, the Masters has the fewest players. They had 96. Well, there are 100, all 100 of the top 100 that are available. They're in the field this week. They get invited, and they take a lot of pride in having the deepest field in major championship golf. But most people don't talk about that or recognize it because they really only care about 20 or 30 players at the end of the day.
All right, let's get to some players that should be in contention, or at least we think should be in contention. Dustin Johnson didn't play well at the Masters, but is a South Carolina guy. He can win when he turns it on. Has he shown any signs that he is turning it on?
No, not really. He's kind of in this mini slump for Dustin Johnson. I mean, it's not like he's missing cuts left, right, and center, but his last five tournaments have not been up to the measure of what we saw from him, particularly in the summer and fall last year. Just kind of what we've grown accustomed from him. It seems like at times he puts it together and then it doesn't stay together for four rounds. But Dustin Johnson doesn't stay down for very long, and the market's kind of bet him down a little bit. So I do find it interesting that he kind of went off in the 14-1 range when not but 6-7 weeks ago he was going off in tournaments at 8-1. So I think this is kind of a buy-low opportunity. I love his chances on this golf course. He's still as long as everybody else, very comfortable in pretty much any set of conditions. And he's done well in Pete Dye golf courses in the past.
Let's get to Jordan Spieth, because this is, again, a big question, because he's going for the career Grand Slam and very, very few people have done it. He seems to have his game back, but then there are times where I see him on the leaderboard and then a day later I don't see him on the leaderboard anymore. What's his game like right now?
Playing great. T3 at the Masters, T9 last week at the Nelson, on two very, very different golf courses. So I think what Spieth has done very well this year in getting back to who he is accepting who he is. I think he spent 3 years out in the wilderness trying to be someone he's not, trying to hit the ball farther, trying to hit the ball straighter off the tee, trying to do some things that would make him a more supposedly complete player that he just wasn't comfortable doing. And this year, he finally accepted that the best golf he plays is this crazy brand of golf where he makes mistakes, he tries hero shots and pulls them off, he makes putts from everywhere, he does stuff that frankly other golfers just can't or won't do, but that works for him. That's his path to victory. That's his path to success. And if he's willing to accept that, then he does well. And I think he has fully embraced that again this year. And once you kind of get on the roller coaster with Spieth, it's kind of hard to get off
once he gets
rolling.
Bryson DeChambeau has a lot of what he's done and brought the kind of attention that he's been bringing for outside fans with the way he's muscle bound, the way he's hitting it far. Is that dying down, or is that still a conversation piece at the PGA?
I think right now it's kind of in a lull. He kind of goes through these periods where he's trying to change something. He's trying to get faster or trying to figure something out. And he kind of, not like his speed for 3 years, but go out into the wilderness for a few weeks, fall off the leaderboard, and you go, well, I guess he hasn't figured out golf. I guess he hasn't broken it yet. And I think the reality is no one's ever going to figure out golf, but he's trying to figure out a way to be most effective in all of the things that he wants to accomplish. Well, he stunk in the Masters. That course clearly confounds him. This week, I think his trouble is the wind. If there is substantial wind each day, he prefers to hit the ball far by carrying it far. He doesn't hit it and then let it run very much. So putting his tee ball in the wind, and frankly all of his other shots into the wind, making them more susceptible, that's not typically a recipe for success in playing in the wind. So I don't love his chances this week, particularly if the wind picks up.
I would never tell somebody to change their thought process or personality. He seems to be scientifically inclined. That seems to be something he's happy about. That's sort of the marketability of Bryson DeChambeau in some of the ads where he's doing stuff on a whiteboard. But is there a concern that you could just get so bogged down in numbers that you're just kind of go out and play golf. Use your God-given talent and win some tournaments.
Yeah, I think he spends a lot of time trying to pursue things, not that they don't matter, but that don't fundamentally change how he scores. He's trying to hit an 8-iron 200 yards where you go, dude, 190 is really good. Why are we chasing another 10? What's the problem with one TV? And I think he gets so consumed with the chase of what he's going after, whether that's speed, whether that's understanding data, whether that's working in the gym, that he gets sidetracked from what his actual job is, which is winning golf tournaments. But when he gets in there and he gets in the cauldron, he can do it. He closes really, really well once he gets into that situation. So I think it's kind of a push and pull, like you're talking about. Sometimes he just kind of gets sidetracked, and then you kind of have to rein him back in, and nothing reins you back in more than contending for a championship.
Last time they were there, Rory McIlroy won. He is now coming off a win at Quail Hollow. Obviously, his game's good, but Rory sort of had a lull, too. Where did Rory go for a while?
He took Sundays off, apparently, for the last couple of years.
Good line.
And you know, that's just kind of how he has been. But I think his new commitment, he's working with a guy named Pete Cowan, one of the greatest golf teachers in the world, has his first new teacher really in his lifetime. And he's got him to work into a fade, which is really strange to watch Rory McIlroy hit a fade off the tee after watching him hit beautiful draws for forever. But it's working for him. He needs a control shot off the tee that doesn't go wrong when the pressure's on, and if he feels comfortable hitting a fade, like Dustin Johnson does, for that very same reason, then I think that makes him a stronger player on Sundays. It makes him more reliable. Now, if he can figure out the putting, that's going to work in his favor. I think this week, with past Palom being a slower grass, being a stickier grass, it's going to be harder to make a lot of birdies just putting them in. So that works for him because he gains more strokes tee to green than pretty much anybody else. And I think that's a large reason why he played so well in 2012, winning by eight.
Colin Morikawa was a guy a lot of people didn't hear of in the golf community. People knew of him, but the general public, he was a kind of a new star. Does the course conditions, the way it's designed, the way it's set up, is it likely we'll see another one of those, or will we see more of a familiar name win this thing based on what you assess the conditions and the course are for the big PGA?
I don't know so much that it's going to be the course. I mean, I think the course kind of creates a certain subset of players that go in, like we talked about earlier. But I don't think, if you look at the 2012 leaderboard, that it's completely out of place to think that someone who doesn't hit it 300 yards for every tee shot can win this golf tournament. Because if you look at the Englishmen who contended 9 years ago, none of them were long hitters by any stretch of the imagination. So I don't think the course necessarily dictates the kind of pull as much, I mean, to a degree. But I think of that pool, we've got a pretty wide-open field of contenders. The Victor Hovlands, Colin Morikawas of the world are playing great, great golf. They're just as likely to win a major as someone like Rory McIlroy, who has not won one in 7 years.
Yeah.
So we've got all kinds of different people who have – there's no one dominant player right now. And in 2021, we've had winners from all over the place. I mean, I could not have imagined talking to you at the PGA Championship and having Stuart Sink be a multi-time winner this season at 49 years old. So there's a lot of weird stuff happening out there, and I think that pool unto itself really is going to make it an interesting championship, because I don't know who actually I should like this week, because I think there are 20 guys I could like to win.
Ryan, always good talking to you. Really, really appreciate it. Have been appreciating it for years. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks, Tony.
You got it. Ryan Ballingy, golfnewsnet.com for all the latest in the golf world and PGA Championship coverage. Really good stuff. Very good, insightful. He's really insightful on this kind of thing as the PGA Championship underway. I'll give you a quick leaderboard update. Sure. Cameron Tringali at 2 under par after 6. Paul Casey, Ricky Fowler, Jimmy Walker, the 2016 champion, all at 1 under. John Daly had it at 1 under a little bit ago. The 1991 PGA champions. There you go. Little brief, small, short, little leaderboard from the opening holes of the PGA championship. It is Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
This is Wings. This was another one of the NBC's shows from the early 90s, 1993. This was a good show.
The Cheers spinoff.
That's right. They had a little airport in Hyannisport, right?
Yep.
Cape Cod?
Nantucket?
Nantucket? Yeah. God, my memory bank's going. It was a fun little show. They had the girl who had the southern accent, the actress who had the southern accent. Really good-looking lady, but she was like from North Carolina or something.
And then the two brothers.
And the two brothers that ran the airline.
And Thomas Hayden Christian, or what was
he? He was the mechanic.
Thomas Hayden Church.
Yeah.
Lol.
Tony Shalhoub, is that how you pronounce his name? He kind of got famous, but he was in there too. There you go. Wings.
Good stuff.
Good stuff. Cheers ended on this date in 93. Is there a show on television now that we all would stop what we were doing? Like, I just don't think there is.
No. Like, that's why I said I think the last one might be The Office. Maybe Ted Lasso. But see, it's kind of weird because it's not network.
I don't think Ted Lasso has 45 million people.
Yeah, it's not network. That's the problem.
It's no. And I know people when I tell them about Ted Lasso and they go, where do you get that? And they go, Apple. They go, I'm not subscribing.
Yeah, I don't have it.
And I go. But remember.
It took me almost a year to get my brother to watch it. And he's a huge soccer fan.
It's amazing how television, again, you go to MASH, you go to Cheers, the season finale of Seinfeld. Newhart, I remember, was a great season finale with brought Suzanne Plachette back to pretend it was all a dream.
Yep.
Like, there was so many ones where, you know, I do remember Lost. I do remember a lot of people watching the finale of Lost. But I don't think there's a television show right now on that you would say, America, stop what we're doing. We're all watching the last thing of whatever.
Because even, like, Modern Family ended last year, but I don't remember it being that big, like
Big Bang Theory too. I don't remember that.
Yeah,
I don't remember big watch parties for that either. Anyway, the Jake Asman Show is coming up next. Thanks for joining us, and we will see you tomorrow morning. This is Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.